We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by
now. No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fall. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo, and on today's episode, this will be the last you'll be hearing of my voice, this intro. I am on at least a one-week podternity leave, so today, the great Alex McDaniel and Caroline Darney are hosting the show, and they are taking on 10 Things I Hate About You. I gave them whatever they wanted. I said, you guys pick a movie and dive in, and dive in they did. It is a very enjoyable episode. Really loved hearing this for the first time, hearing this show brand new, just like everyone else. So I'm grateful that Caroline and Alex took the time. Great work by them. I want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group, of course, especially our producer-level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Class Day, Envire, Jason Alva, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Real Juan Balagoon, Jeff Esses, Anthony Scafone, and Taylor Logan. Biggest thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting the show. Looking forward to a great year here on Big Screen Sports and a great year for our Patreon group. We're going to do at least a monthly live watch every month that the Patreon is voting on and deciding on that movie. They're picking at least one to two movies a month. So a lot of good stuff there. If you want to support the show and have a say in what we cover and participate in those live watches, go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. And with that, I think we just kick it to Caroline and Alex today. They're talking 10 Things I Hate About You. A lot to go over in this one. I can't think of two more perfect people to cover this movie on the pod. So it's Caroline, Alex, 10 Things I Hate About You. I will probably be back next week, but I don't know. Maybe Caroline and Alex just on the show now. Let's kick it to them. 10 Things I Hate About You.
All right. First of all, you're not Kyle. I'm not Kyle. Where is Kyle?
I thought for a little bit about doing like, hi, I'm Kyle. Just doing the whole thing throughout. Everyone just knows it's me, Caroline, doing Kyle the whole time. Because Kyle's not here. He left us in charge. This is essentially like when your parents bought a town and they put money on the counter. And like, what is the Mulaney thing where he's like, basically there's a horse watching the dog?
Yeah, it's like... What is it? Here's money for pizza, and here's the number for the doctor, and you're a horse. That's what happened here.
That's essentially, yeah.
Because the babysitter was just a little older than I was. Now, Kyle, I don't know this as a fact, but I'm going to present it as a fact. Kyle is exhausted because he and his lovely wife, Jacqueline, recently welcomed a new baby. And we can ooh and ah about that all we want because that's adorable and she's beautiful and it's wonderful. But if you're out there and you've had a newborn before and you've been responsible for it, you know what Kyle's going through right now. This baby's only been around a week. I mean, he's probably delusional. He's probably like having hallucinations, clearly in no shape to run a podcast. So
can't do that. Hallucinating. You can't do.
I mean, it would be more fun, probably. Yeah.
He said for a while she was only sleeping on humans, and I feel like that would make things more difficult if this sweet bebe would only sleep on another living human, because that means you can't do other things.
They're demanding, babies are, but that's not why we're here today, Caroline. By the way, Caroline Darney, editor of Bet for the Win and the pop culture editor for the Win. How you doing?
I'm good. I miss
that's
you.
That's good.
So yeah, that was excellent. Who are you? Who am I talking to?
Who, you know, who are any of us really? I'm Alex McDaniel, managing editor for The Win. I know it's been a minute since I've been. What was the last thing? Was it that thing you do? Was it when we all jumped on?
Might have been.
For that. So, and I take a lot of breaks from this show. not because I don't like it. It's just life gets hectic. So this is like my seventh triumphant return.
I know I'm excited to have you back. We did I was stuck with like Nanny a bunch and stuff, you know.
We did
Princess Bride, which was super fun.
Oh, that is fun.
And we did a few other, not too many holiday, well, we did a couple. Well, did we do, I honestly, new year, new me, I don't remember anything I did in 2023.
That's probably for the best. I don't want to remember anything about that year. It's 2024. We're looking toward the future. But you can't look toward the future unless you take a look at your past. And today we are going 25 years back.
Stop.
To the year 1999. Lots of blockbuster movies that year. But today we are focusing on a classic. If you are a millennial and you were, you know, either a preteen or a teenager in 1999, and you didn't see this movie, like, you were living under a rock. Caroline, tell the people what movie we're talking about.
We're going to talk about the Shakespeare adaptation of Taming of the Shrew, 10 Things I Hate About You, starring the oh-so-charming Julia Stiles. She looks like a youth in this movie. And the wonderful Heath Ledger, which we talked a little bit before we started recording about, like, how it's tough. It's tough to watch Heath Ledger stuff following his death and knowing, like, he was just so incredible on the screen. So, like, their chemistry, that's one of the things we can talk about too. It's just like, but the chemistry the two of them have in this movie is fantastic. And it's something that I had the soundtrack to this movie. One of the things that come, like, I have seen this movie a billion times. I watched it today. And one of the things that always immediately comes back for me in these movies with this time frame of, like, Dawson's Creek, which gets a reference in this movie.
Yep.
Dawson's Creek, the OC. Like, I would go to the store and I would get the, like, CDs that they'd release of where it's, like, Dawson's Creek Volume 1. And it's, like, you know, whatever mishmash of Paula Cole and whatever else is, like, on this CD. And I vividly remember having this one, and it's got all the, like, what is it, it has like UB40 on it, and
And Save other. Ferris makes sense,
yes,
for those of us who went through a ska phase. Okay. let me ask this. All right, let's say it's a Saturday morning in 1999. All right. I'm not going to reveal our ages on this show, but let's just say we were pretty young in 1999. Now, of course, I grew up in a small town, so, like, the only place I was able to buy anything was Walmart. I don't know what that was for you. Did you have Target? Like,
this would have been, we were getting stuff at, the Base Exchange.
You've had a whole life. So it's 1999. First of all, you're getting ready for a date. Like, maybe you're going to go buy an album, whatever. What are you wearing? What are we putting on a typical Saturday in 1999? Cause I'll tell you what I was wearing.
It's like a baby tee, wide leg jeans, maybe one of those, like, stretchy, like, I don't want to say tattoo necklaces, but you know what I mean.
Exactly.
The choker. I had a couple, like, beaded necklaces that had, like, little, like, beaded flowers.
Yeah.
Maybe if I was going a little crazy, I wear the puka shells. You know,
I was about to say the puka shells.
If I thought I was going to see Chandler or Justin, we might have put on the puka shells. Look nice. Probably in Germany, so I would have had, like, sambas, like black sambas.
Like, wow.
Or I had a pretty solid Doc Martin collection at that point.
Oh yeah. Docs were big at that point. Let's see. I would have definitely been in like a spaghetti strap top, but the spaghetti strap would be like half an inch wide because we don't want to make God mad by showing too
like,
much shoulder.
Do you have one of the ones that like 50 Cent wore?
Basically, yeah. And it was probably like from Old Navy, so it probably had like an American flag on it. And like shorts, really tall, which these are back in now, like the platform, not like espadrilles, but like the just thick ass platform sandals, butterfly clips in my hair.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Vanilla frosting lip smackers on my lips. Because I wasn't allowed to wear makeup back then. I was 13 then, couldn't wear it, but I had the vanilla icing or I don't remember what it's called.
Yes.
It smelled amazing. And oh, and like some type of glitter gel. Just all
my mom would have outlawed the glitter gel in the house because it just was too messy. No glitter gel for your girl, which was
listening
fair.
Like NSYNC's debut album.
Oh my God. What a time.
Or Britney's. Folks, was crazy.
Like 99 slapped. Like what I don't know how everyone feels about their own like generation time growing up. I do frequently feel very lucky to have been on that like weird cusp of the internet.
Yeah.
Where like
oh, yeah.
Where we experienced the like you're going to again, it was a little different for us like living overseas. Like there wasn't like a huge like really a huge mall. The like base exchange at Ramstein is like really nice and stuff. But so you'd go like meet your friends there. Like our street like had a bunch of American kids that we went to school and stuff. So we'd all like go hang out in the Aldi parking lot, like ride our bikes like a bunch of dorks. But like you didn't have cell phones. Like it was just a very thank God we didn't have a bunch of cameras because all the those pictures would have been just a mess.
We had disposable cameras.
We had AIM. I rollerbladed so much that summer. Was AIM really? I don't think I had AIM until I got back to the States, but maybe I'm mixing
it
up.
It was big over here then.
Yeah,
because it was like AIM, and before we all switched to like MSN Messenger because we got a little older.
Well, maybe we were.
Version.
This felt like we'll talk about it in depth, I'm sure later, but like it was a moment when homegirl rolls up in that prom dress. The pink, like I vividly remember that as a child, as a teen, and definitely not being allowed to wear like anything that showed like my midriff to like prom. But like I just when she came out, and that was like, oh my God, this is taking me back. Like 99, everyone's kind of worried about Y2K, you know, just like overall sense of dread.
Yeah,
you
know, like
will your computer start?
I feel like our parents were doing all the worrying about it and we were just like, whatever. But I do. So I'm not going to go as far as to say like this movie was part of like my sexual awakening or anything as a teenager. It is the first time, though, that because up to this point, you know, it had been a lot of boy bands and stuff for us in the 90s growing up. And so I was like, I like Justin Timberlake and I like the Hanson Brothers and I like these very musical, very, just like whatever. And before I saw 10 Things I Hate About You, I didn't find anything about Heath Ledger interesting. And then you see the movie and I'm like, I don't know what I feel right now. I just want to be on him.
Yeah.
Not like it was, I don't mean that in like a terrible way. I mean, I was 13. But you know what I mean? Like, you're just like, I would kiss that boy. I would kiss him so hard.
Like, he's very cute. And it was the movie went pretty against a lot of the trends when I'm talking like, especially I will say just for this hair fashion for men, there were not a single spiky blonde in the movie, which is like, I was like, well, that's the only thing that betrays the time period in my opinion, unless that was just something that was happening like on military bases in Germany, because everybody had the center part blonde or frosted tips. Everyone
that was happening over here too. It was definitely happening in Marion, Arkansas, I'll tell you that.
Marion, Arkansas, and its sister city Ramstein, Germany,
the epicenter of culture.
But I do think there's so much to this movie that went over my head when I was 13 or 14, whatever. Because there's a lot of sexual innuendo or some straight up like sexual stuff that's like hilarious. Yeah. Like, you know, you look at Alice and Janney, who I forgot. I don't think I ever realized that was Alice and Janney as Miss Perky.
Oh, yeah.
and like she's writing like a romance novel, which at the time I feel like wasn't, now like romance novels are having like a whole moment, which is kind of fun for everybody. But
They're
then,
definitely hitting a younger crowd now, for
yeah,
sure.
it felt much more like, yeah, that's probably what it is, like taboo slash for like older women.
Yeah.
But I think that it holds up relatively well.
Yeah, there are some parts generally, and we'll get into it when we have to go through this goddamn run sheet, Kyle. We might just throw the run sheet out. I don't know. We'll decide. There are some parts that made me cringe, and
Yeah, absolutely.
it's not so much like we've talked about this a lot before. It's not like, oh, how dare this movie. It's more of like I cringe because I'm like, we very much accepted things like that at the time. That's the cringeworthy part. It's not, oh my God, how could they? I understand why they could, because that was the culture and that was, just some like things that are uncomfortable in there. But I think as far as like the overall just like rom-com, and sorry we're busting out before rom-com month, but this was an emergency situation. I think it's a solid rom-com, but so rarely did we get rom-coms for teenagers that either weren't totally sappy, like I don't know why a Cinderella story just popped into my head, or
Yes.
so raunchy. That was also, wasn't 99 the year American Pie came out? Or maybe it was 98,
I
but
think
like,
that's close, yeah.
so you had these two sides. It was either sickly sweet, and it was like nobody wants to do that, or you had American Pie that you weren't allowed to watch, and if you did watch it, good God, if you were a preteen, you were so overwhelmed. This really hit a good,
Yeah.
like, just something in the middle that said, okay, you're a teenager, you should be having conversations about sex, but it didn't go over the line, but at the same time, it still has all the sweetness to it as well. So I
Yeah.
like that.
And I think
I like it.
it's a fun, I guess we'll tie in the Hall of Fame starter. I always get these in the wrong order and he laughs at me, but the rankings. Where does it stand rom-com for you, and where does it stand Shakespeare adaptation? Because I feel like that's another category that is super fun for stuff like this. And I think it's a Hall of Fame adaptation, and I'll probably make it a starter for a rom-com.
Yes, I do. Should we get into that? I guess we should. We should do the Kyle version of it. Okay, first question. It's Hall of Fame, all-star, starter, or bench warmer. So
Okay, then I, yeah.
we'll start with rom-com. So where does it stand with you for rom-com?
I'll say All Star. I meant to put it in the second. I don't know if it's necessary.
Okay.
Well, it might be Hall of Fame. It's really good. It's fun.
I don't
It's.
think, like, here's the thing. I think it is a rom-com. When I think of rom-coms, I don't really think of it. And I think it's because it's dealing with teenagers. And for me,
Say, yeah.
it's
Yeah.
just my brain. Like, when I think rom-coms, I'm like young adult living in this, you're
Yeah.
grown, you've got all that. But that's just my brain. That's not saying, I'm not making a
No,
declaration or
I think that
anything.
makes sense. I think I would say All Star that has like a really good career for like a long time, but
Yeah.
like, makes a couple people's ballots for Hall of Fame and is
Yeah, I
like
agree with
in the
that.
discussion, but n doesn't ever like cross into getting into the Hall of Fame because it's a
Sure.
solid flick.
I agree with that. Okay. So all of that again, I'm not saying it all again. Shakespeare adaptation.
Hall of Fame, I think. I think
Yeah.
it's up there.
What's your reasoning?
Because it does the fun. It's all about for me when you do adaptations, and is the hints of it is like
Yeah.
it has to be enough that you recognize what material they're trying to adapt from, but it can't be so like one for one that it's so. My favorite is probably She's the Man.
I was about to say She's the Man. I shit you
It's
not.
so good.
I was going to say She's the Man in this one, the best.
That movie is art. Like it's
It's incredible.
fantastic. And that does
For those who
justice
don't
enough with
know,
the names. And this one, his name is Patrick Verona. And you've got
yeah.
like the Shakespeare stuff at the end with like the dorky friend that's like helping. So like there's enough that if it's not like Romeo plus Juliet, which I think is another, like, I don't know if those count as adaptations. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know where the like line really is. Like,
Well, they are.
technically,
It's just
yeah.
these are more, these aren't like, direct, but you know, they're using the same names. They've got,
it's
like
Clueless.
Do
it's like Clueless for a Jane Austen adaptation. That also, yeah, art, like perfect. And so I will say, I did see Anyone But You in theaters whatever before Christmas when it came out. And my beef with the way that they marketed the movie is that they did not mention, like, at all in the marketing that it's an adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing. And so that's one of the things where I'm like, if you're going to do an adaptation, like, make that part of the thing, like, because that, I think that's fun. I think that brings an extra layer to rom-coms, to like modernize a Shakespearean tale, because like, I think the Shakespeare now I'm into, like, I think Shakespeare holds up pretty good. Yeah, good.
This just became an NPR podcast.
Yeah,
well, Billy, that was Caroline Darnay with her take on William Shakespeare.
Oh, Billy Shakespeare, for LFO.
Billy Shakes
has a whole bunch of hits, man. He wrote a whole bunch of sonnets, there you go. But yeah, I think that there's a fun, you know, Lion King technically is an adaptation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this one and She's the Man are the two best. Obviously West Side Story. I say obviously as if I didn't watch like 45 minutes of West Side Story and then be like, oh shit, this is Romeo and Juliet.
Oh yeah. But I mean, that's the thing about Shakespeare though. It's such a foundational, fundamental form of storytelling, mm-hmm, that we fall back on all the time. Like, that's the thing. A lot of things are technically Shakespeare adaptations, but they would never claim that. And yeah, they're not making that part of it. It's just kind of the fundamentals of it. And I think, and this isn't an original thought, a lot of people have said this, what impresses me about 10 Things I Hate About You is, like, Taming of the Shrew is like a really, for me anyway, it's just kind of blah. Like, all right,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
What a story. But it's also like, obviously, again, talking about the times, it's like super sexist.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, like, they literally in the title are calling this woman a shrew. Like, I think
calling this woman a shrew. Yeah, and so I think they, you know, with something like Romeo and Juliet, what a classic story. You could go in a million directions with that. It's hard to do that with The Taming of the Shrew. And so I think they modernized it in a way that didn't feel out of place, and it didn't feel like they were reaching too hard. And it's like a if you didn't know, it's just like you said, if they hadn't made it a point to match the names up or have the little references or the I burn, I pine, I perish part, things like that, it would just be another teen rom-com and you wouldn't even think about it.
And it's still enjoyable. Speaking of adaptations, have you ever seen Strange Brew?
Is that the one with Jake Johnson?
No, it's okay, like an 80s, I think it's in an 80s movie.
Oh.
We watched it in Latin class in high school. He needed a it's Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas.
Oh, okay.
And they SCTV. In their quest for free beer, bumbling Canadian brothers Bob and Doug McKenzie wind up working at the Elsinore Brewery.
Man, I'm gonna get so much hate for not knowing that.
It's a Hamlet, but it's excellent. I actually don't think you'll get a ton of hate. I feel like it's very, very, like, the only time I have really heard about this or discussed it is having seen it in that class. Like, it's not something where people constantly have been like, oh, like Strange Brew. But very funny. So anyway, if folks listening haven't seen it, highly recommend. I don't know where you could find it. It's probably, there's only probably like two copies on like VHS, so you have to like find the owner of and share with them. But yeah, anyway, that's the
okay. IMDb trivia. I didn't go as deep as I normally do on these movies because I just ran out of time. I have like a few. One thing was, two people who were considered for Heath Ledger's role, Josh Hartnett and Ashton Kutcher.
Do you know the crush that I had on Josh Hartnett in 1999?
Who didn't?
I mean,
you're not original.
I know, true. So true. The pictures of him from Teen Beat were definitely like in my locker. Like,
man, I mean, Pearl Harbor kind of,
he's special.
Ashton Kutcher would have made this a much sillier movie. Not that it isn't kind of inherently silly on its own, but like,
yeah, he's not brooding enough. I think you could get away with it with Josh Hartnett, but I don't think you can do it with Ashton Kutcher. I don't know.
And Kate Hudson was considered for Julia Stiles' role. And do you know what stopped that? Goldie Hawn. She didn't like it. She didn't like the movie.
Really?
Yep. Damn, but that's it, okay.
That's fine. We got Julia Stiles.
Kate has had a decent career.
Like, she's done all right.
It's been okay.
That's interesting.
Did you pull anything?
Well, this is just fun fact trivia. I've been once to that school because it's outside Seattle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely ridiculous place, obviously. And it just reminded me, I don't know. I'm trying to remember like the last one I watched. I don't keep track of like how often or when with what frequency I watch like rom-coms from the 90s, but I haven't watched it in a long time. Anyway, it just reminded me how beautiful that area is. Not to be like super cheesy about it, but
no, but it
the
is.
The views and like all the, yeah, it's just absolutely gorgeous. I love it so much. But yeah, because they didn't use any sets. Like they shot all of everything everywhere, like at the spot. And I absolutely die every time with the last shot, whatever, with the band on the roof. You know, how long would that have taken?
Forever.
To get them up, like get all that stuff up there.
Like, and then just take after take after take. Like, and I can't even imagine. And this is also another example, not that this stopped. I mean, I don't watch a lot of movies these days with high schools, but like, I just feel like in the 90s, high schools and movies were ridiculous. Now, again,
absurd.
I went to high school in Marion, Arkansas. There were like 200 people in my graduating class, and that was considered big. So, but I remember like She's All That and all this. And like what always killed me in these movies is when the high schools would be two stories, when you had to go upstairs to get to a class. That was crazy to me. I was like, what? Where are you going? What's up there?
We had upstairs at our in Germany. Did we have it in? I don't think we did in Virginia. I think we did in Germany.
I mean, my son has stairs in his elementary school. So like things have changed.
Things are multi-leveled now.
You know, but it's insane. And they would always have like big swim teams, and like the marching band was always practicing with the other teams. That's what I love, is that everybody just shares a field after school.
At the same time, do you know how like when in reality the sports teams are so territorial? Like when we played soccer and lacrosse and especially in Virginia, like the football coach like refused to let us practice on specific fields so that we didn't ruin their field type thing. You're like, okay, cool. Always. And out here they just have them like all the same. And there's always like way too much going on. Especially when I love a high school familiarization scene. Where it's like, there's so-and-so, that's this group, like, you know, it always hits for me. Like, it's like you said, She's All, like, I feel like there's some of that and She's All That. There's this movie, Clueless has that. And again, Clueless is another one of the, like, these are just like wild, chaotic, like high schools. I'm like, everyone needs to chill, like a lot, like take it down like several notches. I always love this fun fact because it's hilarious. The table dance that she does is what got her the role in Save the Last Dance.
Incredible. Incredible. I mean, Julia Stiles dancing, could watch it all day long. And she just like, pretty much everything she's in, it's amazing to watch her. Did you ever see Down to You? It was with her and Freddie Prinze Jr., a classic as well, but it didn't get a lot of, there's like a whole scene where she's dancing to an Al Green song, I believe, and you know, go white girl, go. What can I say? it's fine. We love her. You know what I just realized?
What
we just sometimes have people who listen to these podcasts and they haven't watched the movies. We've not given like a plot summary. Really, we've just been talking.
I just like go straight in. So, well, let's do that now.
Here's what I'm gonna do. I am gonna encourage Kyle after this to do one, but let's give you ours with no rehearsal. Here we go. Okay, so. There are these two sisters, right?
Mm-hmm. Bianca. The Stratford and Kat. Sisters.
Stratford. The Stratford sisters. Bianca is the younger sister. Kat is the older sister. They are raised by their father, who is an obstetrician. Their mother took off, left. I don't think we ever get the backstory on that, do we?
Nope. She's gone. Up and gone. Left her pearls, went out of town.
They're both sisters are, and Bianca is played by Alex Mack, Larissa Olenek.
Olenek.
And the older sister Bianca is played, or Kat is played by Julia Stiles. Okay, so Bianca, like, they're both in high school. Bianca's like coming into her own. She's into boys, specifically Andrew Keegan, who back then was like, and we'll get into that in a minute about whether he's actually hot or if he was just 90s.
Talking
like,
about Tiger
hot.
Beat.
I know. She wants to date him, but their dad, very overprotective dad, won't let them date. Kat has a reputation, and I'm not saying this, Alice and Janney said this, for being a heinous bitch. And she's very combative. She's very defensive. She's got her guard up all the time. She does not want to date. She sees men as beneath her. She's got her eyes on her future, going to Sarah Lawrence, while her dad wants her to stay and be a husky. So you have these two sisters. They clearly don't get along. And their dad ridiculously makes a deal that if the older sister, Kat, dates, then the younger sister, Bianca, can be allowed to date too, and she can be with Andrew Keegan. So there's part of your plot. We're doing great.
We're doing great.
And then the other part of this, we have a very young Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's new
adorable.
To this yep. high school. He has seen Bianca, Alex Mack. We just call her Alex Mack from this point. Yeah. And
one
he burns,
time.
He
He's
pines.
Seen her one time.
He's seen her once, and he knows she's the one. Yeah. Finds out about the deal, can't date, whatever. So he and his friend, Bernard the Elf from Santa Claus, because yes. I don't know names, but that's him. They come up with a plan to set up Kat, Julia Stiles, with someone so Joseph Gordon-Levitt can get with Bianca. Mm. And this plan centers around Heath Ledger, resident bad boy of the school. He's mm-hmm. one of those, like, lots of rumors have been told about him. He doesn't have a liver. He ate a duck, everything but the beak, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Something. We don't know it's true. The man, the myth, the legend.
That he was in prison the year before this because no one saw him.
Yes. So the long and short of it is, because God knows this has been long, Heath Ledger agrees in exchange for money to woo Kat, Julia Stiles, to date him and to make her believe that he's really into her and to essentially tame the shrew. Isn't that just That's lovely and empowering? Such-
A pretty, but the fun twist is Joseph Gordon-Levitt they trick Andrew Keegan into paying for this.
Yes.
Because he wants to sleep with Bianca, with Alex Mack. And so he thinks that this is all happening and so that he can date her. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bernard the Elf have a plan to...
We're so good at this.
They like swoop in and he will be able to take her to prom and like date her or whatever. This thing I realized goes on the entire school year.
Yes.
Because he's a new student.
Well, does it or is it like...
Or unless he like comes in spring semester or something.
That's what I was thinking. It was spring semester. Because like, why would she know she needs a French tutor? Remember like the first day where he's like, she needs a tutor.
Yeah, he does a French tutor. Yeah.
You know,
so is there no vetting process at this school for tutors? Like,
no.
He's like, I'll do it. And he's like, do you know French? He's like, no. So like,
they don't even have money. They don't have money for multiple sports fields. How are they going to, like, the band has to practice on the same field as the lacrosse team and the football team and everybody else. Of course, there's no betting system.
Also,
for tutors.
Gabrielle Union is in this movie.
She is. And she's fantastic.
She's
it's
wonderful.
A wonderful, wonderful cast. I mean, even Allison Janney, who doesn't get a lot of airtime. This was like right before she really, really got big with West Wing. But she has this incredible scene as the guidance counselor who's writing romance novels in the background using words like engorged.
She's looking for, synonyms for pulsating member.
Quivering member.
Quivering.
Why I did is just... it quivering?
This is just, not sure it's supposed to do that.
It's broken.
I got a text from Kyle. He has been mostly hands off on this, but he wanted us to point out that Heath Ledger, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and David Krumholz all went on to star in Christopher Nolan movies. So he can only assume that Christopher Nolan is a fan of this movie, which I, you know, would assume
Who
that
isn't?
That's accurate. Who isn't?
That actually did remind me, though, we need to take an ad break and then we can get back in and actually do these categories. Here is your ad.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we're back. Kyle's never going to have us on again. Okay. We've got to get into the categories. So the first one, like the real one, is three up. Are we still calling it three up, or have I? It's what worked.
I think so. What worked? Three, okay. Like what? Here, what worked? Yeah, let's just do what worked. Okay. I think the balance of the adaptation, like you said, it's a perfect mix of like we joked about the Stratford thing, and his last name is Verona. Padua is the school. Like, there's a lot of these little like nods to Shakespeare and the play, and there's a few lines that. Cruel to be kind, I think, is like a reference to, there's all sorts of these, you know, like little bits throughout. But even if you don't understand Taming of the Shrew or don't know the story or don't, you don't lose anything. Like, you don't, and that's such a fun, like, again, I mentioned, like, I'm a huge, like, I'm a late 30s woman. Of course, I love Jane Austen. But like, Clueless is another one that did such a fantastic job of that. Like, if you are familiar with Emma, then you understand that all of these things, like the references and the different storylines and et cetera, et cetera. But doing this modern twist, and I don't think that we get enough of that type of story. I don't know.
Yeah.
This could go into a whole, we don't get enough movies like this anymore. And I think part of it too is like, you said either something's like Hallmark or like too raunchy, which there's always stuff where I love raunchy. Like, there's always a time for a raunchy movie. But sometimes you just got to have like a good rom-com or something like that again. And I think that's where we have enough charming people out there. Like, let's make some charming movies.
So I think like when we talk about the teen rom-com, and the reason I brought up like the sickly sweet versus raunchy earlier is because, especially like for those of us who weren't full-fledged teenagers, like I said, I was 13, about to turn, I was 12, 13 that year. Okay.
Yeah.
We, you know, everybody's parents are different. My parents sort of gave me the talk, but not really. Like my mom sort of gave me the talk, but not really.
Yeah.
Everything that we thought we knew or felt or believed about relationships, about the role that sex would play in our lives, a lot of that came from our exposure to movies and MTV and shows and stuff like that. That's why
Dawson's
I say like
Creek.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's why I'm like, when you're that age, everything might seem a little scary. You're just like, I hope the boys love these butterfly clips. Like, you know, you're not thinking, am I gonna lose my virginity one day? And that's why I say, like, I saw American Pie around the same time and I was so overwhelmed by it. It was just like, that's too much. I don't understand. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of sex. It's a great movie now. Like, I look back on it as an adult. Ha ha, with all this wisdom I have. And, you know, I have a child. So presumably I've had sex before. Like, you know,
well,
once you
not
get
so
over,
fast, my friend.
You get over the hurdle. Like, Mary enters. It's like, actually, immaculate conception. And that's why I say when you're at that kind of tender age, I think the sweet spot is a movie where it can be rom-commy, but it's also kind of giving you real insight into, like, you know, people who are okay with their bodies and like expressing themselves sexually. And it just addresses a lot of that in a way that I think was really realistic and not too much, but not like, do you want to go get an ice cream cone? You know what I mean? It's just like
oh
that.
Oh my God, our hands brushed. A Cinderella story is such, I cannot stop thinking about that movie now. Waiting for You is like waiting for the rain.
Oh my God.
Love that movie.
Not hating Hilary Duff if you listen to this podcast.
I will watch just about any bad Cinderella adaptation. Like, wasn't there one with Selena Gomez a few years ago?
Sure.
Was Jennifer Coolidge the stepmom in Cinderella Story?
Yeah.
Perfect. No notes. I think this cast
the gray role.
This cast is incredible. Everything from, like we said, Allison Janney. I think the dad is so well played.
Now don't get upset, Daddy, but there's this boy
who's a flaming imbecile.
Please.
And I think he might ask me.
Please, I think I know what he's going to ask you. And I think I know the answer. No, it's always no. What are the two house rules? Number one, no dating till you graduate. Number two, no dating till you graduate.
I remember, and I don't even know if at like 13, 14, I was fully aware of like what he meant by up to my elbows and placentas. Like,
yeah.
Like, but I remember that line vividly. So the dad was such a great, like, gruff. I remember laughing at the end when Julia Stiles is like, oh, she went to meet some bikers, like big guys full of sperm. Like, just so amazing. Like edgy and all this stuff. The English teacher was hilarious.
Yes.
And then all of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think, is just so endearing.
Yeah.
He was the one that I had a crush on. Like, Heath Ledger was, again, the only thing that made him like a bad boy is that he wore black and he had an accent. Like, and he had the
and
longer
hair.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he smoked cigarettes.
Yeah.
Ooh, and
cool. But like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was exactly the kind, like, my speed of guy, like, when I was 14.
Oh,
was,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
He was, like, sensitive, but he was still cute. It was, yeah. I mean, that was definitely
some
type
sleaze,
of...
like, Andrew, what's his name?
Andrew Keegan.
Keegan.
Who was also, didn't he play, like, Stephanie's boyfriend in Full House, or was it DJ's?
That sounds...
Or am I thinking of someone... I might be thinking of somebody totally different. The 90s are a blur to me now, and it's really sad.
No, he was in Full House.
Okay.
Stephanie's boyfriend.
Okay. Yeah,
oh my
see?
God, that hair was just the never hair, did man. It for me. He was in House for a few episodes.
We should have gotten Andrew Keegan on the show. What's he
Welcome
doing
to the podcast. Caroline's just Googling Andrew Keegan.
Kyle, a note for you when you edit this, just start it here. The other stuff doesn't matter.
I think just overall the cast, I think, works really. Julia Stiles had that perfect, like, snarky teen thing that was like,
yes,
just disrespectful enough that you're like edgy and you don't let people push you around, but also like not a bitch, you know what I mean? Like, they try and call her that throughout the movie, and like I think the bit about getting sent to the teacher's office is hilarious, or like the guidance counselor is hilarious, but she obviously wasn't like doing bad things in class. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, I think, and these are the moments where I cringe, because like it shows you kind of the conditioning of the culture at the time, and even now, I don't want to say that's gone, you just don't see it in movies as much, where if you were a woman in high school with an attitude, then you were a bitch.
Yeah.
That's what you were called. And I very much identified with her character. Not because, like, I got along with most people in high school. I just kind of floated from different groups. Because, like, you know, I was, like, with the nerds and the academics, but I was also the band geek and the drama person. And I didn't have a group, but I was okay with that. But at the same time, I remember just being very severe because of my own insecurities, I think. And you have to decide how you're going to be. And I just wanted to be so, like, kind of above the expectation of what girls would be. So I'm like, oh, I would never date, which, truth be told, I wasn't allowed. And also, no one would want to date me back then. So this wasn't like I was fighting off the boys. And, you know, and they always, like, get their reputation. But one of the most brilliant moments, I think, for 99, because you didn't really see this as much, is when the English teacher is like, all right, Miss White Privilege, essentially. Like, I'm sure, because to truly be that age and to be so disillusioned with, like, everything, not to say that her concerns weren't valid, but also, like, we all need those reality checks when we're younger. Like, okay, well, it's a privilege to be that annoyed by things all the time because you're not facing problems.
Yeah, she was like, how about we get some books by women in here? And he's like, sure. As soon as we get a single, like, Black author on her syllabus.
Yes.
And then the two Jamaican kids, or fake Jamaicans, were like, yeah, I'm not. He's like, don't even. No, don't even.
I know. No, but it was, I really liked that moment.
Yeah.
In general.
No, I'm with you. I was the same, like, I played sports and got good grades and had friends across different, like, group. That's why there were definitely cliques, obviously, but I never found it as, like, stereotypically cliquish as, like, Clueless and this, like, Make It Out to Be Worse.
Sure.
Like, the Future MBA Club, that was the first time I realized what that was, Boogie Lowenstein. and I just could not.
It must be Nigel with the Brie.
One of the best lines.
Now remember, guys, don't touch anything. Oh! Okay, what did I tell you? Oh. Must be Nigel with the Brie.
And one of the things that's honestly, I think, like, permeated, or I don't know if permeate is the right word, but like persevered through the years with this movie, is there's still people that will, like, I've heard that in the last, like, 6 months of someone jokingly saying that must be Nigel with the Brie, and that's an age thing, like that's an art group thing. But it's a clever movie. I think that's part of it too, is like it's got some very funny parts for something that's supposed to be like a teen rom-com, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's enjoyable. No, when he's asking her to pick out which picture she likes better, and they all look the same.
I know. And I do love, like, you know, so actually that's a good point, even though I'm going to skip some of these categories because we're just flowing at this point.
We do what we want.
I'm not doing all these because we've kind of covered them. Okay. Let's get into best scene.
Let's do it.
Because I feel like we should do. I know Kyle normally goes through, like, the list of scenes. We're not going to do that.
Not doing that.
We are now. This podcast is now based on the assumption that if you have not seen this movie, you are just along for the ride. And if you have,
if you haven't turned it off yet,
or else we are going to be here until like 11 and I have a kid to help with math homework. So we're going to get into best scene for you, Caroline. I mean, I feel like we're going to have the same answer, but
for me, it's the singing.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
Of course it's the singing.
Well, and this is the whole thing, like, this is Heath Ledger's first, like, American movie, and man, he, like, this, the duo of this and Knight's Tale had such a huge impact on my life. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Yes. Shout out Paul Bettany's ass.
Paul Bettany Hive. Somewhere, like, Paul Bettany's gonna find out that, like, every week we find a way to talk about him on this podcast, and he's like, wow.
Well, he and Hillary Duff are gonna get together.
Yeah, they're just gonna be like, oh my god, they love us, guys. But it's such a, like, he does such a great job of that, not actually scary, turning into the nice guy. And so you're like, oh, what kind of jerk would, like, take money to date someone, like, whatever. It's the she's all that premise. There's always gotta be some sort of conflict with a rom-com.
Well,
which
yeah.
I would love to have a whole discussion about that someday. I'm not saying we do it now, but just like the idea, like we talked about previous rom-com months where you know, I just rewatched While You Were Sleeping with my sister and my mom over holiday break. Like, there's the whole setup, like, where you're like deceiving somebody. It's the same way and You've Got Mail. It's the same way and like Even Anyone But You. There's all these things where you're like deceiving people. You've got to have this thing. And so, but it's so sweet when like he's using the money to do nice things for her and not just like pocketing things. And like, you know, he counts it all out as like, oh, it's going to cost this much to go to the movies and blah, blah, blah. But he gives whatever $300 it is to the guy in the band to get access to the mic room and have the band back him up, which I think is the cool. And Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, Frankie Valli, and he does the whole like big, it's the big romantic gesture to like get back on her good side, because this was after he wouldn't kiss her in the car when she was super drunk, right?
Yes.
Which again, we love a gentleman.
I mean, you know, again, it's like the 99 version of a gentleman where it's like it's just like how to lose a guy in 10 days. I've spent this whole time lying to you. But that, to be fair, at least with that, they were mutually lying to each other.
Yeah. Again, so, you know, that movie makes me so mad at the end. Why are you mad at each other?
I just think with rom-coms, like obviously every good story, it just every just fundamental to storytelling, you have to have a conflict. That's the only way you can effectively build a story. And that can take a lot of forms. It's just the easiest out to make the conflict that one of them is keeping a secret, because it's the easiest way to make them fight and or break up. You know, and when I think about every rom-com, there's always got to be a secret or a part of them that they had been suppressing the whole time that suddenly comes out, like Fever Pitch, when he skips the game to go on the date and then suddenly he's like, you know, this was supposed to be the best night of my life or whatever, and he had just spent this for me. You know, there's always gonna be something that makes them fight. So like, I get it. But yeah, the singing, very Astaire inspired. It reminded me a little bit of Tom Holland, the beginning of Tom Holland's thing on Lip Sync Battle, you know?
Of course.
naturally, yes.
I also have extraordinarily, I don't love the getting him out of detention scene that makes me uncomfortable. When she flashes the soccer coach, it makes me uncomfortable. Made me uncomfortable then too, so that's good. Continuity.
Yeah,
continuity. But I have a vivid, and maybe it's because it's Fascinating New Thing, FNT, Semisonic. In Semisonic was, I will tell you what, your girl loved some Semisonic. I saw Semisonic play at the 930 Club when I was like 16 years old. Like, could I be any cooler? No. But when they're playing that like paintball, whatever, water balloon thing, that is like a core memory for me. So I have to put that in here, because it's just this like the music, when the music drops and they like have that moment, they fall on the hay, and it's like, that's the like, you know, teenage like, oh my God, it's so perfect. Like, this is what a date's supposed to be like.
Yeah.
And then they like share a moment where they're telling each other the truth about stuff, and like, he says, we're like, you know, none of these things are true, like whatever, whatever. It's very cute. I love that scene. I love it.
Yeah. And I will say, and we'll just wrap this right back into the strikeout category, because they do have lots of cute, like cute couple things that they're doing. I gotta tell you, the most cringeworthy moment for me in this movie, like actually kind of upset me, just because I think it can be very triggering, is when, I can't remember what they're sitting there, and she questions his motive about something. I literally just watched this an hour ago. And he tells her, you need to be in therapy. And just, it just crawled all over me. Like, I was so mad in that moment. And I'm like, isn't it funny?
When he was trying to talk her into going to prom with him.
Yes, it was prom. Sorry. Yeah. Like, amazing how my memory works. And, you know, he's telling her, like, you're the problem. And it's the way that you're thinking that's the problem. When he's openly deceiving her. And he knows that. And then it's goes the extra mile. Like, you're crazy is what he's saying. That was just the 1999 version of saying it was, you need to see a therapist. It just, I'm telling you, I was just mad. I was hot watching it. And so to me, I hated it. Like, I understand him being defensive or whatever, but again, you're the one lying to her. Why are you making her feel worse?
I think
anyway?
100% agree. I think in that moment, when I give him like the grace for that moment, is he's also trying to convince himself that there's no, like, he knows he likes her. That, you know, he's trying to like feel like he has to fulfill this, you know, deal that he's made. But yeah, there's a few moments like that where it's like, oh, that's not something that's probably said anymore.
It shouldn't be anyway. No. It shouldn't be acceptable. But again, like, that shaped what we thought relationships were supposed to be.
You know what gave me anxiety?
What?
deciding the like night of to go to prom.
This happens so often in shows and
there's
movies where it's
0%
like,
chance that you're going to be able to do that.
No.
They sell tickets like weeks before.
And like you need a dress and you need hair and makeup. Yeah. And it's not as simple as, oh, here's a gown in my closet. No, we were teenagers. We weren't. Yeah. I mean, unless you were going to debutante balls, which shocker, I was not. Even despite where I grew up. You didn't just have gowns in your closet. Your friends didn't have extras for you to wear. Well, like, no, that but like,
yeah. And they'd make a kind of joke where he's like, oh, sorry about the last minute thing. Like, where'd you find a tux? He's like, oh, I just had this laying around. I'm like, no, you didn't. How did you I legitimately want to know how you found a tux. Because the same thing, not only did both Kat and Bianca find dresses and like get their hair, whatever, do their thing. But we're to believe that night of, like, as the thing has already started,
yeah,
Andrew Keegan finds out he's been ditched, calls Gabrielle Union, and she's ready to go within like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but that, I'm trying to think of another movie where this happened because it happens a lot. Where
oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, and a lot of times it's in the middle of the dance, like whether it's prom or the dance or whatever, it's like, you know, oh, I have this dress for you, or I have this tux, and you just go. That's not realistic, y'all.
No.
It's just not.
Or there's like, oh, there's this, just, oh, look in the bag. That ain't fitting me. What the hell?
Nuh-uh. Like, we need alterations. Like, I'm 5'0". I need a hem. I need a strong hem.
Okay, I don't have that problem. That's more, my problem is like, I got ankle showing now.
Just this crazy.
This is a midi dress now.
What's your favorite movie with either a prominent prom scene or a big dance scene?
It's got to be She's All That with the choreographed what is the funk soul brother, check it out now.
Yes.
Who's the, oh my god, who sings that? Fatboy Slim.
Yes.
I was like, I ate that up with a spoon. Like, yeah. I thought that there would be choreographed dances. There were not.
I know. Where were they learning these dances?
Like, just, I absolutely could not get it. Especially then you have like Freddie Prinze Jr. and Paul Walker in this. I'm like, yes. Oh my God. That movie had, again, these were all, I don't think I realized like how formative some of these movies were, I think.
I know.
Like, not in a way where I'm like, oh, I modeled my whole life around that. But like, these are things that 25 years later still have a huge, like, spot in my memory.
It sets up your expectations for like what prom or homecoming or whatever is going to be like. Mine, even though technically the best part of the scene happened outside the dance, Pretty in Pink.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
An all-timer.
Yeah,
an absolute all-timer. I love it. And Mean Girls, strong one. Carrie,
yes.
Arguably.
I relate a lot to Carrie.
Very vivid dance scenes. And like, go ahead.
I was going to say, I loved a dance themed or set episode of television. So like,
yes,
the prom episodes of Dawson's Creek. Oh,
amazing. Saved by the Bell even.
Yes. Like, I'm telling you, like, I love them. Like, it's perfection. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think, had a couple.
Because like all the, especially the early 90s when, you know, you have these obviously very small sets and you have like eight students out there. That's the whole high school. So eight,
yeah.
Like different, yes, couples. And they always had a dance. They always had dances going,
yes,
on. We never had dances.
Always a fight in the bathroom or a cry in the bathroom.
Yes.
After a fight. I've mentioned Dawson's Creek a couple times, but there's, again, I said that the dad says he's those Dawson's River kids sleeping in each other's beds. I remember this line, like, it's, I don't, mm-hmm, it's just mind-blowing to me how much of this movie I actually remember on like a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But oh, Pacey Witter, Joshua Jackson. I have talked about my lifelong crush of Joshua Jackson on this podcast before, starting with Charlie Conway, and then like, I just remember, there was, if I'm remembering it correctly, which could be wrong based on like there are a billion episodes of Dawson's Creek and they went off of streaming for a while and it's been a while since I, but I think there's a like prom-esque related one where like Joey and Pacey are like starting, or like he likes her, but she's refusing to get involved because of stupid Dawson. Dawson's the worst.
I know.
But these things all, I could have done with more dance, this movie, if we're being honest.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of drama. No, we need more choreographed
More
dancing.
choreographed dancing.
Yes,
There,
personally.
I did find, like, why on earth would Heath Ledger, I almost said Heath Miller. That's how my brain works.
It's cool.
Why would Heath Ledger know his fav her favorite like band to the point where he could like call in favors to have them show up to stuff?
I know. I mean, I guess
Like,
the assumption is it's always like what's happening when, during the montage, we're just assuming they're having these cute conversations. Like, because I gotta be honest with you, I've been dating my boyfriend for 6 months now. I don't think he could tell you who my favorite band is. Not because he doesn't know what music I listen to, but there's not like a definitive one
I
that
don't know
he.
what my own favorite
I
band
know that's
is.
the thing. I don't know who he would. He would probably go, and this would be awesome, by the way, but he'd probably go with, like, Jason Isbell just to be safe.
Yeah,
Like, she talks
great
about him a
choice.
lot.
Yeah, she listens to that.
But yeah, that's a really, like, it's a very sweet thing, but it's kind of like,
Yeah,
how did you
and
know
then
that?
the she happens to like part the sea of students and find her
Yes.
immediately, like walk right to her, and then just sings at
Yeah.
her for a second and then turns around. Incredible.
And it's
It's
wonderful.
yeah. I will say back on one scene we missed, I did like the party scene, even though that also comes in with
Yes.
like the like strikes for me. Because again, I never I didn't drink in high school. Like that was something that
Yeah, I didn't
I
either.
just it wasn't really like I'm sure people did it. I know people did in Virginia. I don't know. Anyway.
Lot of drinkers up here.
Yeah, a lot of there was I think a lot of stuff being done there, and I was oblivious to all of the things. I was like, I remember like my second year of college, I came home one time and I was like, I saw all those ads or like infomercials back in the day, and they talking to school, they're like, someone's gonna offer me weed, and
Yeah, it was the DARE program,
I
and
was
we
like,
knew what to
not a single
say.
person has offered me a single drug.
Yeah, because they don't want to give away their drugs. They don't tell you that when you're saying, like, who's gonna just give away
It's
their
like the
shit?
Halloween argument where it's like, hey, parents, people aren't putting
It's
drugs in your kids' candy. They want to keep it.
too
But
valuable.
I also really, really love a wild high school party scene. Like
I do
Superbad
too.
has a couple good ones, obviously.
I don't know. I mean, I know there were definitely parties when I was in high school. I never went to them. I was,
I
my
never.
dad told me the day I graduated, there was a big party and he said I could go. And I was so scared because I knew there would be drinking there and I was not going to drink. And so I was like, what if, blah, blah, blah. I just was really scared and there was a bad storm as I was driving. So I just turned around and went home. I mean,
Yeah.
that's like, I was not partying. And I'm like, did they really have these? Where were the parents going? Where
I
it's like
know.
everyone had a solo cup. How did people know how to stock these parties? I mean, these are teenagers. They don't know what they're
No
doing.
idea. I think it would all be older siblings, wouldn't
I guess. Or just the
it?
parents themselves, like Amy Poehler and Mean Girls. Like, if you're gonna
Like,
drink, just do it in the
just
house.
do it
You
in the
know?
house. Because I'm the same. Maybe I just wasn't cool enough to get the cool invites, but I don't remember ever. EZA also has a great party scene.
Great party scene.
Great
American
party.
Pie, great party
Yeah.
scene.
I'm still thinking about the like, that must be Nigel with the brie. But absolutely love the also the scene where he throws the invitations to the future MBA's party down this
Yes.
the giant stairwell, which again, what kind of school, what kind of castle, what, you going to Hogwarts, what are we doing here?
That's yeah.
But leading up to it, it's just such a great, that's a visual that has always stuck with me too. So God, this movie's
Yeah.
great. I love this movie.
It's just everybody just had these robust social lives. And I just, if that was happening at my high school, I definitely was not part of it. But again, like I had band practice.
Yeah.
Like there was like stuff to do. So I have no idea.
Yeah,
Okay.
I had National Honor Society, folks. That was
Yeah.
cool.
And French Honor Society.
Yes, I also was in French
God
Honor Society.
almighty.
I had varsity soccer practice.
on the same field as the marching band.
But we all had to squeeze in, make it work.
Yeah, squeeze in. Just stay right here. Don't move. Just stay in this block formation. Oh, best supporting character in this. It's got to be Bernard the Elf.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say David Krumholtz. Is that that's his real name?
That's wild to me that that's his real name.
Who actually, he was fantastic in Oppenheimer, by the way. Speaking of Christopher Nolan.
Yes, he was
wonderful.
And that's why I say I can't believe like I don't even sort of know his name because we've grown up with him.
And this is I wrote this for the win when Oppenheimer came out, so I guess it would be July, late July. He's a that guy. Like Oppenheimer was the art of the that guy because you had to have with so many dudes, generally white dudes, talking in that movie. You had to be able to distinguish who each character was. So even if you didn't remember names, you remembered their faces. And so when you have, what is it, David Saltalamacchia? That's his real name, right? That might be a baseball player, Jared Saltz. Oh no,
clearly
I've ruined it.
I'm terrible with
see
names.
This is what I mean, like these are real people, but I know their faces. And so Josh Hartnett, it's Alden Ehrenreich, aka Han Solo. You've got obviously Robert Downey Jr. Like there's these guys that you recognize from things that you don't necessarily know immediately who, like, hey, that's that guy. It was a whole movie full of that guys, and that's why he was so good in it, and he was so good in this. He was the perfect like narrator stand-in ? Is that the right type? Like you kind of walk. Sure. I feel like he walked us through the story to start, especially. Like he was your shepherd.
He's that person.
Yeah.
A very effective device to kind of give you the lay of the land just as the guy showing the new kid around school. Like that's another thing. It's just brilliant how that transcends.
Allison Janney also in the running.
Incredible.
She's
like just a few moments and she just captivates, but she was always gonna do that. I mean, she's just and she's so weird perky in it.
Yeah.
Like when she says, okay, cat. And then she picks up her coffee cup, cat.
You know what that scene actually reminds me a lot of, or I guess the later one reminds me of this one. Did you see Spy?
Which, I know.
With Jason Statham and Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, highly recommend. It is probably my favorite, like what, it's probably a top five favorite comedy for me. But she plays like the CIA director and she does a very similar like behind a desk funny comments type of thing. It's art. I had a lot of flashbacks.
I think I have seen it now that you bring it. I don't know. When did it come out?
I want to say like 2015.
Oh yeah.
What year did I just tell you? 2015?
Yes.
Because that is correct. Let's
all right
go.
You know, I'm kind of good at that too. Even movies I haven't seen, I can pretty much nail when they came out.
Yeah.
Which is shocking.
Highly recommend. That's part of my underrated. It's up there with like Game Night. And now that I've seen The Nice Guys, I watched that for the first time like 3 days ago, a week ago.
What is that?
That's the Ryan Gosling. Gladiator, Russell Crowe. Nice Guys, other guys, The Nice Guys.
I don't know. Is this the gangster movie? No, that's
it's a comedy. It's based in like, it's like a 70s themed. Highly recommend. It was very funny. Ryan Gosling was a delight, unsurprisingly. But yeah, it's those are my like underrated comedy Hall of Fame role models being number one. Because
Obviously. Okay. On that note, let's take another ad break.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. There's this great, by the way, I say great, it's probably not funny now, but I remember laughing at it years ago. It's this SNL sketch where Ben Affleck, well, Jimmy Fallon, this is back when we all still liked him, plays a just really cheesy, typical morning radio DJ who like does all the sound effects and stuff. And it's a really dumb sketch, but it was, they did a few of them. And there's one where Ben Affleck was hosting and he plays like this rival radio DJ, and they start like using the same sound effects and just using each other's shit, and Jimmy gets really mad, and they just keep going back and forth with like different ways of saying "and we're back." And we're so back. Whenever I do that, that's what I'm channeling. And we're back.
I
hope you enjoyed that ad, whatever it was. Kyle, we did your ad breaks, buddy. We're naturals at this. You don't need to come back.
Go buy all of the things that were just mentioned, and then ad break.
So I guess who's the villain in this? I guess is it Andrew Keegan? Is it men in general? treating
I
women
think,
like things you can manipulate to
I
do
think
what you want.
Overall, or like the big, I think Andrew Keegan is the big one because he's the one that is doing all, like, one, he's willing to pay to deceive to like go on a date with someone. He doesn't want to date her. Let's be honest. That's not at all what they frequently reference her, or at least once, which is enough, as, hey, buddy, look, there's the virgin. Like, relax.
Yeah.
Yuck.
And we know his backstory with Kat, too.
Yes.
So. They've set him up to be the bad guy. Because we have to be fair, the paying the guy, I don't, because everyone's trying to manipulate a woman in this movie.
Yes.
So I don't consider him the villain for that, but I do just his general motivations. And the whole backstory of Kat and just him in general, his existence, him breathing, him existing.
Yeah.
Not
he's
a fan.
Just, I will say, did you, he didn't do it for me. Does he didn't just as
never,
a teen? No.
That's why I asked, like, is he objectively hot or was he that 90s hot of just like guy with the longish hair who for some reason dressed like he was on Miami Vice as like a 16-year-old and clearly had daddy's money, you know, and drove the nice car. Like, was it just a 90s thing? I'm not saying he's a bad looking guy. This isn't me saying Andrew Keegan is ugly. So since you're definitely listening, Andrew Keegan,
he's angrily turned it off at this point.
Yeah, he's mad. I'm sorry. Hillary Duff, please tell him we didn't mean anything by it.
Please reach out.
I guess my thing is, I just remember there being a lot of fervor and just, he was like, he was a regular in Tiger Beat and Teen Beat and Tiger Teen and all the magazines we read. And he just never did it for me. It's kind of like Zachary Ty Bryan. Like, he was just one of those that just never did it for me.
Yeah. And I think that was partly, Zachary Ty Bryan is another really, really good one. Both of them. So Andrew Keegan had a couple movies, obviously, like this one. He was also in O, which also a Julia Stiles, and was also,
a Shakespeare
adaptation.
Yeah.
But he was on Seventh Heaven for like 30 episodes or something. And that's,
is he Mary's boyfriend?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think I need that wonderful, hilarious guy on TikTok to like do an Andrew Keegan one. You know what I'm talking about? You've seen that guy. I've sent you one of those where he like watches old episodes of things and he's like, I just watched this like absolutely crazy episode of Seventh Heaven, and he like talks about how the wild plot lines. Amazing. He did one for the claymation Rudolph, and I was like crying laughing. I wish I, like, this is a great story for listeners as well, because I don't remember his name, but he's on TikTok, and I'm sure you could find him just on the things we've said. But that was like his real, he wasn't a huge movie guy, because I was just looking at it. Andrew Keegan wasn't in a ton of movies. That was like, you know, it was this extremely specific amount of time in the late 90s, early 2000s that he had just to complete Jonathan Taylor Thomas type chokehold on the teen magazines that were like that had the center fold. Centerfold sounds so dirty. I don't mean it like that. But like the ones that would turn into posters.
Yeah. That's why we bought them, so we can have the posters.
Yeah.
And to like, or learn like, fun facts.
Cut the pages out so that you could put them like in your notebook, like the binders that had like the clear front that you could slide through. But yeah, it was not my, again, I agree with you. Sorry. Andrew, you're a lovely man.
Totally. Just very like objectively good looking.
Yes.
It's just, I wasn't pining, burning.
He also played this part extremely well. And so, yeah. So I guess if we're defending the villain, which is kind of why we're talking about this, the dad's rules are absurd. So you got to do what you got to do.
Yes. His motivation sucked. But as far as just like trying to, you know, like if you knew that, let's say his motive, and here's my thing. Let's say like he genuinely wanted to date Bianca for the right reasons.
So like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I mean, that's the thing. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Andrew Keegan are doing the same thing in this movie. Yes. It's just one has good motivations, the other doesn't, but they're doing the same bad thing.
Yeah. One just wants to go sailing.
I know. One just wants to like hold her hand and like talk about their future. And so it does open that to like, you know, the means to an end debate, because again, you're manipulating women to get what you want. And, you know,
I support women. Bianca kind of sucked.
Oh, sure. She's the youngest.
She got better over the course of the movie, but she was a sophomore in high school. That's really, we all sucked as sophomores in high school.
What I like about her, though, is like when Joseph Gordon-Levitt, what does he say? Are you always this selfish? And she's like, yes. Yeah. Yes, I am. Like, she doesn't even, at least she's not delusional about it. She knows. And she's trying to have a normal childhood, despite the fact that they have to live with the fact their mother chose to just up and leave.
So for some reason, until this watch, in my head, the mother had died.
I thought so too.
And I was having a very like 27 dresses moment where it's like, now you're just the bitch that like cut up my mom's wedding dress.
Yes.
Because that's how I remembered the pearls, is that the mom died and she like was wearing them around and like, but like, it's still very brutal for, I would assume that having a parent just choose to leave is devastating and extraordinarily difficult. But I would probably wear her stuff. Yeah. If she up and left after a certain amount of time, I'd be like, man, screw you. Yeah. I'm going to wear this jewelry. Like, but I also understand from Kat's perspective, she was the older, like she needed that guidance and that role model. And she's trying to do all these things. Everything she's done is to protect her little sister and little sister, which I am a little sister. So I get it. Little sister's just like, you're a bitch. You're making it hard for me to like go hang out with this underwear model.
So I looked it up because I wanted to make sure we weren't wrong about this. And I think it's left to be ambiguous. So it seems like at least a few sites that I found in this 10-second Google search. what causes the confusion in the Pearl scene, when she says it's not like she's coming back to claim them, which makes it sound like she died, but it's later when Kat is telling her about having sex with Andrew Keegan. She said, yeah, I did just once after mom left. And that's the part. So like, I think they sort of left it in the air, but the assumption is that the mom left.
Yeah. This time watching it through, I thought they made it clear that it was left and not died. For some reason in my head, I was like, she died. And that was why, like, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the natural assumption, but that is a little bizarre. But yeah, Bianca, she's the younger sister. She ultimately looks up to Kat, even though she'd never admit it. But she also wants to be her own person. And like, I have a younger sister, I get it.
Yeah. And I am the younger sister, I get it. I wanna... but I also just kind of wanted to follow Megan around like forever. So
yeah.
That was much more my vibe.
Relatable. Like... I mean, my sister would never admit that, but she totally feels the same way.
All I ever wanted to do was whatever Megan was doing, whoever she was hanging out with is who I wanted to hang out with. And she was like, get away from me.
Aw.
But now we're best friends, so it's cool.
Now you're besties. That's the great thing about sisters. Once you get older and you get enough like years on you, then you're done fighting most of the time. But
yeah.
Best time, worst time. Wait, nope. I cannot pass this because it's a disservice to you. The Peter Gallagher Award.
Ooh.
For hottest person in this movie. Caroline, take it away.
Is so easy.
True.
This is Heath Ledger through and through.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, we get an honorable, adorable mention for JGL. I just think he's such a cutie, and I think it's fun that he had one of the, I'm like thinking through it as I'm saying it. Of the cast, he ended up having one of the like better careers? Question mark. Yeah. Obviously, Allison Janney's been in a ton of stuff, and Julia Stiles went on to, especially, I don't think, is she still doing stuff?
She was just on SNL a few weeks ago dancing.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Save the Last Dance. God, so we need to just do Save the Last Dance one time, just so like for the like cultural cornerstone that movie is. The number of like parody things I've seen of her like Juilliard dance is outstanding. It's like cool. It's almost like center stage where these like, I do this like cool hip hop ballet because I'm neat and like no one is like me, and it's just like awful dancing.
It's like that infomercial that everyone,
oh my god, the lady that
parody it. Yes, she's like, so I like to
that's
point
what's in hip hop.
This is hip hop. What did she say? Like, I do points, but I do them like this or something. She's like, and kick, and kick, kick, and kick. That's hip hop.
Oh man, that video is so. Every single time I see it, I'm like, there's no way that this is real.
I know.
God, yeah, Heath Ledger. Look, he's just so. That smile, man. I swear.
Smile gets me every time.
Yeah, he's, again, I'm telling you, Knight's Tale. And I think Julia Stiles is absolutely adorable in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of hot people in this movie, to be fair.
There are, Gabrielle yes.
Union. You have Alex Mack. Like, a lot of very shiny, happy people from 99 that were watching yes. this movie.
I just looked up Save the Last Dance because I wanted to do my I'm obligated by law to remind everyone that Sean Patrick Thomas went to UVA. But I forgot Kerry Washington was in that. That was just the sisters, Kerry Washington.
I've never seen it, so maybe
what?
I know.
Oh, it's terrible. It's
I'm
terrible.
Sure it is.
It's so good.
The Keith Morrison Dateline episode in this movie has to be like, where's the mom? Get it together, Caroline.
Okay. Well, they said that she'd been gone for like 3 years.
I don't know.
Something like that.
I guess. Yeah. She right after mom left. So it had to be about 3 years. You got this.
I got to like get my the right headspace. Laughing through myself. In 1996, they looked like the American dream. Father, mother, two beautiful daughters. But one day the mom went missing. Did she just leave? Did she have it with the perfect life? Was it not as perfect on the inside as it seemed on the outside? Questions would be coming for days on end, but no answers to be found. Was it the dad? Was there foul play? Or did she just move on? Tonight on Dateline.
Oh my god,
the funniest was we did the live watch a couple weeks ago for or month, I don't know when that was, I don't even remember. Oh, it was Winter Soldier, and the like, oh, something fun. Happened with the audio at the end, and so people got to see like real time that I just come up with them. There are no
Wait,
notes.
They thought you rehearsed them?
Yeah, there. I was. I don't know. Kyle was like, I don't know. People think, but there are no notes. Like Caroline just goes in the zone and like does these. These Keith Morrison, bits. But yeah,
it's pretty incredible.
Of course, the which father character was looked at first.
You have to. I need you to say, and why didn't she take her pearls?
And then there's the fact that she left behind several personal items. Who doesn't take their pearls? Is that a clue? But she would never come
Which
back
character?
To claim them.
Just like her daughters. Just like her family. Which character would be Air Bud? I guess the best friend.
Yeah, I was gonna say Bernard the elf would be fantastic. It would be funny if it was Alice and Janney. He's just writing like smut. Like they go in to see Air Bud when they get in trouble, and he's like, "Excuse me, just a second." Like dog and boss typing.
Oh my god! What's the big chill moment in this flick? Is it the singing?
I like the singing. I think it's supposed to be the poem. We didn't talk about the poem.
Oh my god! Okay, forget about Big Chill for a second. We got to get to the poem, and I, you know, I'm gonna read it out loud. Because we can't just, yeah. So the end of the movie comes, and we've been following, you know, Julia Stiles in this English class that she's always mad about.
And she's clearly, she's supposed to be, and I think she is, she's smart. Like, she's a smart character. And they do the, my favorite late 90s trope of person, you know, strong, independent female wants to go to Sarah Lawrence. Or, like, some small, very small, they never are like, oh, I want to go to, like, they, you know, Duke. Like, I don't know. It's never even, like, Harvard, really. It's just, like, this very specific,
East,
like,
Coast liberal arts college.
Yes. It's always something that they're, and the thing being, oh, it's so far away. But she gets into Sarah Lawrence. So she's smart. She's getting in from California to Sarah Lawrence. So, anyway, sorry, go ahead. So we're assuming she's the grades for this.
We've reached the end of the movie where she knows she has been deceived by Heath Ledger. Yes. And they still have to go to class because you're a teenager and you got to go to school. You don't get to avoid the guy who was being paid to date you. So we know she has all these aspirations. We know, like, she claims to have this. And she is very smart. Look, I know a lot of smart people. I think I'm pretty bright. I'm not a poet. I couldn't do any better than this.
Actually, very same. I'm not a poetry person.
You would think, especially for a movie that is a Shakespeare adaptation, that we could have maybe just come up with something a little better. But here's the poem that Kat reads to Heath Ledger, to Patrick, at the end of the movie in class. I hate the way you talk to me and the way you cut your hair. I hate the way you drive my car. I hate it when you stare. I hate your big dumb combat boots and the way you read my mind. I hate you so much it makes me sick. It even makes me rhyme. God almighty. Okay. I hate the way you're always right. I hate it when you lie. I hate it when you make me laugh. Even worse when you make me cry. And then her voice breaks here and she starts to cry.
Uh-huh.
I hate it that you're not around and the fact that you didn't call. But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
I don't like those green eggs and ham, Sam. Yeah.
It's a burden to try to swim through these words. Like, here's what I hate. And the fact that you didn't call. Let me just, if any aspiring writers out there, can I just tell you?
Take that out.
Pick one. You can pick, and the fact you didn't call, because you're outlining like what you're saying. The fact you didn't call makes me sad. Or you could say, and that you didn't call, because that is doing the work of the fact. You do not put them together. You don't say, and the fact that you didn't call. All right. You're welcome.
You've been edited.
You've been edited, everyone. It's just, it's silly. And it's like, again, it's a high school poem. And
if she's, if she's asking if he wants an iambic pentameter, I expect more. That's the thing.
I know.
Like, I'm not a poetry person. It's not even reading it, definitely not writing it. Nothing will, what is it again? Not to, like, I think it's the third time I've talked about Pride, Jane Austen, but in Pride and Prejudice, where they're having this whole conversation, she's like, no, I mean, poetry can be great for a fine, stout love, but like, if it's not, it could kill it real fast. Like, and bad poetry, I'm the person that if someone that I was dating wrote me a poem, and I had to pretend that it was special, I'm a horrible person. I would just
pray to God that never happens to me, because I won't be able to hide my true feelings.
It always happens on The Bachelor and Bachelorette. Like, I wrote you something. I would be like, I wish you hadn't. I wish you hadn't. Like, why don't you leave it for me, and I'll read it later,
and I'll edit it.
I will come back with some notes.
It's gotta be tough dating a writer slash editor. It really does, because, yeah. You know, if you even if you felt compelled to just write a nice text, you're like, oh, I better get all my, you know, and like, we don't actually care about that stuff. Although I did just say, was it yesterday, that I think the reason dating apps never worked for me is because I would get the writing ick really quickly.
Oh,
either through text or on the profile. If they can't, like, if the writing's bad, I'm like, okay, that was your first impression and we're done.
I can't believe that I'm still single with the ick that I get on your and your, like,
I mean, but those, it's just called standards and you don't lower them.
Yeah, I just can't. I've done the typos. I've made the mistakes. I've been like talking too fast to someone in text or whatever.
Of course.
But this isn't a this isn't a profile that you picked, you spent time on.
Time on it. It's like a resume. You have like, this is your one sheet. It's your one shot to make an impression.
Looking for
have
someone
a friend,
to go
have a
through
buddy.
That crazy little thing
crazy
called life.
Little thing called life. Okay.
Just looking for my partner in crime.
Please. Okay. Just as an aside, if you are using dating apps, which I think is totally great and they just never worked for me, but I think they can be really awesome. And I have lots of friends who've met their, you know, future partners there. Avoid saying things like just looking for someone to do life with. And the one we just used from a friend shared with us the other day, he saw like a Hinge profile that said like, this, I'm just trying to get through this crazy little thing called life. Look, if that's who you are, if that's how you talk in real life, go for it. I'm a big proponent, like, be who you are. But if you're just saying that because you think that's the vibe on the dating apps, like, just want someone to live, laugh, love with. Like,
and look, the prompts are brutal. Like, you look at it and some of them you're just like, oh, I don't know. We could do like a whole 3 hours on just dating apps because it's bleak out there, folks.
We'll do it for home comments. Yeah. So before More or Restore, would you rather see a prequel, sequel, or remake of this one?
I think a remake. I think I'm ready.
Who would star in it?
Oh, good question. Well, Glenn's still
too
Allison
old,
Janney.
So don't start.
I know. You know, I was like, well,
could Glenn do it? No.
Allison Janney could reprise her role. Perfect.
Yes.
Let's see.
Tom Holland could do Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's still a baby looking man.
Yeah.
That sounded weird.
I think you could do. Well, that doesn't really make any sense. I was like, you could make them a little bit older, but like if someone's dad is being like, no, you can't take them out.
Yeah.
And you're like in college at that point. Who are the youth? I'm sure there's like, you know who'd be great as a Julia Stiles? Is it Sadie Sink? Is that her name from Stranger Things? The redhead?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She would be delightful in that. Yeah, that's hard
problem.
To cast.
I don't know youths anymore.
I know, same. That's what I'm like. Who are, because even really we're talking about like 20 somethings, because that's usually who plays the 16-year-olds.
Sure. Even then, it's.
I know. I don't know. We're washed. We're old.
We're old. We can't even answer a question on the podcast.
I don't know if I say remake, but like then I think about someone redoing it and then I get mad.
And it's an adaptation too. So we could always expand this out to like.
I think.
What's a different type of.
Yeah.
Maybe one that's less about she's a shrew, we should tame her. Like, or what if you flipped it and made the shrew the man?
Love that.
And like, yeah, I love that idea. Let's flip it. Make the women the deceptive.
Great. Now we've ruined it already.
Well, hey, we need to take our shots where we can get them. This went really well. I think a good job.
I think Kyle will love this.
I know. That wraps it. Was there anything else that we didn't cover? I hate that we almost missed the poem. That would have been tragic.
Yeah, I don't. That would have been. This is better because people had to stick around for it.
I know.
No, I love this movie. I'm glad we decided to do this one. It's a fun flick. It's
a fun flick. And thanks to everyone who put up with us because we did not have a lot of prep time for this. And we were literally pulling up the run sheet like 2 minutes before we got on here. Sorry, Kyle. Yeah.
It's been a busy time of the year, you know?
It has.
All sorts of Caroline, stuff.
Tell the folks what you've been doing.
Yeah. So actually, by the time you hear this, I actually also, I don't know why I say actually so many times there. This is a fun one to have release. I think it'll come out the day of the national championship game, which is fun because one the dad wants her to be a Husky, which is you don't, who's playing in the title game. So we'll have a bunch of post NCAA championship content, a lot of football content coming up, lot of Golden Globes content if you are wondering what happened to the Golden Globes, but also For the Water Cooler is returning. Yes. When you listen to this, it'll be this week. So we are recording an episode to kick off season two, and you can pop on over to Instagram For the Water Cooler, new Instagram account, and you can go find, we have an email address and a voicemail, so you can it's the future.
But do you have an AIM? Like,
yeah.
What's the AIM username?
Yeah. And you can leave us a voicemail on like things you want us to review, or if you watch something we recommended, or you want to tell us that we're great and awesome. Any of those things, you can check all that out and find it on Instagram. So yeah, we're excited about season two coming up. We've already got two really great guests to start off the first couple weeks. So we're very excited.
We love it. We love cross promoting, using Kyle's podcast to promote our own shit. I'm up to nothing, so sorry to disappoint, but awesome. Well, I think Kyle might be doing the outro, but in case he's not, that's all for Big Screen Sports. I am your co-host, Alex McDaniel, with the lovely Caroline Darney. We will see you when we see you.